American, welcome to another...
The official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
You hear that, Ern? The Leaky Cauldron.
Just go! We're wasting time!
Welcome to Pottercast, your number one source for news, theories, discussion and interviews with people from the Potter books and films. I know a small amount myself, having written the books. My name is J.K. Rowling. I am now happy to introduce your hosts, Melissa, John and Sue.
Welcome to Pottercast 155.
555.
155.
It's the musical cast, everyone. Welcome to Pottercast 155, where we
155,
sing
because 155. Because everybody failed the audition process to replace Melissa this week. We are here.
You know, we had many applications too, but no one compared.
No one
Melissa.
Could do it.
No
you
one
know,
can.
Even Mooch could try it out, but
she did. She threatened to cut us and send the backlist on us, but
which was
said,
a
no
gesture.
No, Mooshka, no.
No.
Yeah.
No.
No means no, Mooshka.
Anyway, I'm here. This is John Noe. I'm here with the lovely Sue.
Hello.
And the lovely Frack.
I'm quite lovely.
He's a lovely man. And we are here with Pottercast 155, and we have a fun show this week. Actually, this is a massive Phoenix Files show.
It is.
We have the entire battle for you with our second-to-last ever Phoenix File. We have lots of news this week, including some highlights from Joe's amazing, awesome commencement speech at Harvard University the other day.
Yes, marvelous.
So that would be cool, too. So, without any further screwing around, mm-hmm. Should we jump into the news?
Yes. Our lovely Miss Joe, for those of you who do not know, gave the commencement address at Harvard University this past week on June 5th. And it was a very moving, very inspiring speech. In the morning, Jo received her honorary degree and I think a letter, doctorate of letters, I think is what it was she got. And then in the afternoon, Jo gave the commencement speech, which is a very famous honor. In the speech, she spoke about two things. She spoke about failure and imagination. And you might think to yourself, well, now how is that a good thing to give to graduating students who are about to make their way onto the world? But Joe, in the course of the speech, really talked about how failure and it can influence your life and the actions that as you go through your life. Joe spoke during her thing about, you know, her failures and her struggles as a single mother before she achieved her extraordinary successes with the Harry Potter books. And she talked about, first time as I can recall, her speaking about Amnesty International. And I mean, she's obviously talked about it before, but she spoke very movingly about an event that happened to her and how that influenced your life. And that was just, but then the power of imagination. It was just, I don't know. It's one of the best speeches I think I've heard in a long time, and if not one of the best commencement speeches I've ever heard, but that was brilliant. What do you guys think?
Yeah. It's just something about listening to her talk and just reading. I mean, I read the transcript of it first, and then I went and listened to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, she just totally has this amazing way with words, and I couldn't help but think on the funny idea as I was sitting there reading that and also having the CNN on in the background listening to everybody trying to give their speeches to campaign for president. Like, could you imagine if she campaigned for somebody? Just how she's 10 times more eloquent with her words than any politician we have running right now.
Her vocabulary, it's just amazing. Just the words she chooses and...
Yeah,
I agree.
She takes things, I mean, she referenced only very slangly the Harry Potter books. I mean, she made a joke at the beginning, and there was a big, you know, hoo-ha. She referenced the Mr. Dumbledore. But I thought this line really, really stayed with me. It said, "We do not need magic to change the world. We all carry the power we need inside ourselves already. We have the power to imagine better." And that's just... there's so many great quotes that Joe said that you could, people everywhere are already writing them down and just taking them to heart, but I just, you know, that's what the real magic is what you can do with your own imagination and you can overcome. And, for me, when I was graduating and sitting there, I mean, I can't remember either of my graduating, you know, that I heard, either one.
Yeah.
No, sorry.
Well, mine was only 3 years ago. I still have a hard time reflecting back at what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Oops. I think I'm actually graduating like next week or something.
You're walking?
No, I'm not even going, actually. For some, I don't know why, I'm really going to be in town, but, random. I will definitely not remember what the person said at my graduation.
You can't go, or you don't want to go?
It's going to be a very small thing.
Yeah. The answer I'm looking for is you can't go, because if you say you don't want to go, I'm going to lecture you. So, I don't know if you want to hear
a little bit of both.
Jonathan!
Now you're opening up me up to emails on it, too, so. Anyway, Joe, let's pause here and play a few highlights from that amazing speech.
The first thing I would like to say is thank you. Not only has Harvard given me an extraordinary honor, but the weeks of fear and nausea I have endured at the thought of giving this commencement address have made me lose weight. A win-win situation. Now all I have to do is take deep breaths, squint at the red banners, and convince myself that I am at the world's largest Gryffindor reunion. Delivering a commencement address is a great responsibility, or so I thought, until I cast my mind back to my own graduation. The commencement speaker that day was the distinguished British philosopher, Baroness Mary Warnock. Reflecting on her speech has helped me enormously in writing this one, because it turns out that I can't remember a single word she said. This liberating discovery enables me to proceed without any fear that I might inadvertently influence you to abandon promising careers in business, the law, or politics for the giddy delights of becoming a gay wizard. You see, if all you remember in years to come is the gay wizard joke, I've come out ahead of Baroness Mary Warnock. Achievable goals, the first step to self-improvement. One of the many things I learned at the end of that classics corridor, down which I ventured at the age of 18, in search of something I could not then define, was this, written by the Greek author Plutarch. What we achieve inwardly will change outer reality. That is an astonishing statement, and yet proven 1,000 times every day of our lives. It expresses in part our inescapable connection with the outside world, the fact that we touch other people's lives simply by existing. But how much more are you, Harvard graduates of 2008, likely to touch other people's lives? Your intelligence, your capacity for hard work, the education you have earned and received, give you unique status and unique responsibilities. Even your nationality sets you apart. The great majority of you belong to the world's only remaining superpower. The way you vote, the way you live, the way you protest, the pressure you bring to bear on your government has an impact way beyond your borders. That is your privilege and your burden. If you choose to use your status and influence to raise your voice on behalf of those who have no voice, if you choose to identify not only with the powerful but with the powerless, if you retain the ability to imagine yourself into the lives of those who do not have your advantages, then it will not only be your proud families who celebrate your existence, but thousands and millions of people whose reality you have helped change. We do not need magic to transform our world. We carry all the power we need inside ourselves already. We have the power to imagine better.
Yeah, and to hear the rest of that, to hear more of that, and to watch the speech, actually, we have it in our Leaky video galleries as well, and the transcript provided by the HarvardMagazine.com. You can get links to all that stuff in the show notes, and on Leaky, this past week has been doing an amazing job covering all of this. Thanks to Sue and Edward and Kristen and everybody posting the news and all that stuff.
Yes, thank you very much.
Very good work.
It's just so, I mean, when she, you know, when you think, when we get involved in that you're reading these books, and then, you know, all these many years ago, when you get involved in these series, and you never thought that Joe, probably she never thought in her mind that she would ever be delivering such a speech. I mean, because these speeches, these commencement exercises are a big deal. And the ones at Harvard are, I mean, they've had people like Bill Gates, you know, I mean, Madeleine Albright.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Just some extraordinary people that have given these you know, speeches before. And now here she is. And I can't even imagine what that must have been like for her to stand up and realize that, you know, just another, I mean, all of the amazing successes that she's had. I mean, I just think that must have been overwhelming. I would love to hear her thoughts on what it was like for her to be, wow, I get to do this too, you know?
I mean, she must be getting to a point where it's like, what honor to receive is intimidating.
Yeah.
I mean, I think she said she was quite nervous about this one, certainly. But it's like, where now from here? I mean, she's done stuff with, like, the Queen and everything.
Yeah, I mean...
And it's like...
Yeah, I mean, she's had like, you know, planets. She's had a dinosaur named after her. I mean, she's you know,
that's right.
You know, from the. What? No, no.
Oh.
I mean, it says, you know,
she's a
Draco Rex.
A dinosaur from another planet with a doctorate.
You think?
You know, probably this time next year she'll be speaking at like the UN for something about the importance of imagination and global diplomacy.
Well, you know, they could certainly use it, couldn't they? Now, I mean,
for real.
You know? She's talking about, you know, one of her lines, she was talking about empowering yourselves and, you know, those who think negatively about creating monsters, you know. I think that can certainly apply in any facet of our lives. And I just, you know, so. It's, you know, what's that?
This is so random. I don't even know why I'm doing this to you guys. Do you think that there is the Wizengamot, that's strictly England, right? Do you think that there is, like, a UN for the Wizarding World?
I think so. They dealt with foreign governments in book four with the Quidditch World Cup. So I imagine there's some sort of organization to organize that a little bit.
Yeah, I always thought that we'd have, like in book seven, there would be Dumbledore appealing. Well, not Dumbledore, obviously. Maybe book six or at that point, Dumbledore, when he was still alive. He would be wanting to appeal to all of the other, you know, wizarding countries and be like, this threat is very real. It's bigger than just England. If he takes us, we'll take you next. And, you know, have all, like, the leaders come together and have Dumbledore be, like, in this world stage. But I wonder if there even is something like that or if everybody's kind of on their own and, like, Triwizard tournaments are unique and that they bring countries together.
Actually, can I just say this about it? I just think that I think we talked about this once in Canon Conundrums, in early Canon Conundrums, about there being a Wizengamot. We thought there might have been. I mean, there had to have been some sort of international magical cooperation. So, you know, for the Quidditch World Cup. So certainly there, you know, I think it would
be interesting.
That would be kind of cool.
You know, it's funny. It was something Joe said in her speech. Another thing that I wasn't thinking of is the idea of reunions, class reunions. And she said, maybe she's at the largest Gryffindor reunion. Now, like, I wonder if that was on her mind, too, for if the students had reunions.
That would be awesome.
That'd be a fun little short story.
Yeah.
That'd be a fun little short story.
The little Harry's class have a reunion and talk about things, and then having to, like, something goes wrong at the castle, and Harry and Hermione and Ron have to figure out what it was. And,
all right.
Peeves ruining it.
Well,
it was Fluffy all along. It was like Fluffy still the third corridor.
You think Fluffy's still around? Yeah.
20 years later, we forgot about Fluffy.
No, Todd.
Ew. There's our fan art challenge for the week, guys.
No.
We had a Fluffy skeleton in the third corridor.
That is disgusting. No, we are not having
puppies.
That. No.
It's so sad.
They are not. They do not.
Yeah, John, that's a horrible idea.
It is.
John.
Boo. Boo for John. All right, so yes, as John noted, the speech, you can watch it on LeakyIn. We have great text and read it and enjoy it. It's marvelous, marvelous speech.
Cool. All right, is there any other news, big news this week, or little news?
Well, I mean, there is little news, but it's kind of any news. Dan Radcliffe and Richard Griffiths are going to be presenting at the Tony Awards.
No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
My boy Dan is going to make
it. Made it clear, Sue. We don't want to hear any of that nonsense frilliness.
I mean, let me tell you what. The Tony Awards are a big deal. If you're a theater fan, as I know we all are here, and it's just, but for them to be presenting at that, that's going to be pretty cool deal. Because next year, obviously, they could be up for one of those awards. Mr. Griffiths, of course, has, of course, won them.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, do they have, do they do, like, performances
yeah.
for plays? Like, I know, like, they do, like, performances for musicals.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it...
Do you think, like, Dan could end up performing something on stage for Equus? Like, at
absolutely, he could.
If they were nominated?
Absolutely. Absolutely, he could. I don't think he'll be doing it this year. Yeah. I don't think he'll be doing it this year, but next year, I mean, if he does a good job...
Well, yeah, because they're not nominated. Yeah. Or are they nominated?
No, they're not nominated. They're
no,
just
only,
presenting.
Like, American theater,
they're
right?
Just, yeah, they're just presenting this year. But, I mean, next year, when they open... I mean, they will be eligible for next year's awards. And they do... It depends, like, on who's producing. Like, sometimes they'll vary, but usually they have, like, a dramatic scene as well as the musical.
It has to be a wardrobe shift.
But,
well, I mean, obviously it won't be, like, the naked part.
No, because it has to be shown on
just
TV.
Be like a Nielsen's nightmare.
It's on CBS, and they're not...
Skin-colored leotard.
Then I just...
But they had, like, a big, giant happy face cover it.
With the Walmart happy bulb up there. Voldemort bulb.
Yeah. Oh, flashing low prices.
Oh, no.
Oh,
terrible. Anyway.
Oh.
What else?
There is one more bit of news. Speaking of theater, and even though she's also a moving actress, but Helen McRory, who is a very fine theater actress, is playing Narcissa Malfoy in the upcoming Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. And we heard a new interview with her. It's a new audio interview. And she talks a little bit.
Oh, I don't know.
She's fabulous. She's talking about her clothes again, although we've not seen official outfit of photo of her. It's very couture mouth. But she, you know, it's funny. She said working on the Harry Potter films is like a fantastic thing. She's like, it's like being in Alice in Wonderland.
That's a great quote.
With her fellow actors. Isn't it, though? I think so. Very magical. Very fun. Very cool. So, other than that, I mean, Joe is the big thing. And then next week, of course, a reminder that on June 10th is the auction for the prequel, and it'll be online June 11th, so... I'm sure that y'all want to go see that. So, you know,
a little bit.
Oh, heck yeah. How much do you think that's going to go for?
Oh, I don't know. They're already talking like $5,000 and stuff, but I think it'll probably go for like 50 or, you know, who knows.
50,000 poons or American dollars?
Pounds. So that could be like $100,000.
Criminy.
I don't know what it'll go for. I mean, who knows? It'll probably go for like, I can just see it. I don't know if it'll go that much. I mean, who knows? There's all these kinds of rampant speculation, but we won't have a chance. We aren't invited to bid on it, so, you know.
I think it'll go for like 2.6 million pounds.
You think?
Or whatever Beale and the Bard won.
It was like, yeah, four.
What did Beale and the Bard get?
4 million, almost 4 million. So, yeah, I don't know, but that's 800
okay.
words. What that breaks down to, though, per word. That'd be awesome.
That would be interesting. It's kind of like when you go to the supermarket, yeah. When you look at the tag, it'll be like 35 cents an ounce. You look at your tag, and it's like $83 a word. I mean, a letter. I'm like, wow.
Yeah. A letter. Yeah.
Somebody, I forget where I was reading this or seeing this, but somebody called her like a golden goose or something recently. Just like, whenever she wanted, you could lay a golden egg. Like,
yeah.
Would her write a story on this napkin?
But what's awesome is she lays golden eggs for charity.
Yes. That's the best part, you know. I mean, rock on for dyslexia for people like me who have it, so.
We love
you. Go on. You go, girl.
Yeah.
And one other thing, this is kind of cool. If you live in the UK, you can now get Order of the Phoenix on iTunes.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
The movie.
The movie, that. Yeah. And here in the United States, although I know it's already been here for a while, but you can also now get Chamber of Secrets if you already, and that's been out for a couple weeks, but.
Oh, very cool.
So hopefully more. I keep hoping, and John, maybe you could talk to your friend Noe Lover 42 and see if she could put a bug in
naturally
Mr. Apple's eyes, ears, or whatever, to make a Harry Potter iPod with all the audiobooks and all the movies.
Ooh.
I just want to, like, all that.
Ooh.
That's my dream. You know?
That
you
would
think?
Be pretty slick.
Yeah, I remember the old Harry Potter iPod. I wanted it because
you do?
I would love to say, like, what if they had made iPods, like, in house colors?
Oh, man, that'd be awesome.
And they had, like, a red and gold one, or, like, a green and silver. Oh, that'd be so cool. Somebody, does anybody out there like to design that fun stuff? You know, a lot of people mock up Apple products for fun. I wonder if any of our listeners
I don't think
do that
so.
Kind of thing. They could mock up a house color
I doubt
iPod.
It.
That would
they so
like.
Much approve us wrong.
That'd be so cool.
I'm trying to go to.
But I want to, because you know, I named my iPod the Puff Pod, so
the
I
Puff
would
Pod.
Love Puff a Puff Pod.
Puff a Pod.
Yeah, Puff a Pod. Totally.
Or whatever it is.
I did. No, my house is not a cream puff. We are not a pastry. We are.
Oh jeez. Yikes.
Okay, so I better go all because right. I can just hear Melissa
with
now.
With that, I think it's time
to
push on to all of our massive
word
files.
Up.
Okay.
Sound good?
That was a little aggressive.
Well, this is the second to last ever Phoenix Files, you guys, so it's probably going to take a while. This is a big, big battle chapter, which was the coolest part of the movie, I do declare.
Yes. Ended last week on Luna telling us how to get there, correct?
Yes.
What did she say, Frankie?
We fly, of course. We fly, of course.
And this was the point in the theater when they flashed the 3D glasses for everybody to put on.
That's right.
Yeah. No.
I'm a little disappointed that we haven't had a 3D release DVD or something.
A what?
They haven't released the 3D stuff on DVD.
No, not yet. The home theaters aren't ready
for
it.
Oh, but you know, dude, it's Warner Brothers. They'll milk it at the end when they come out with the box set and the extended version. You know, all that's
what
coming.
What if, like,
you
all of
it
was in 3D? No, they couldn't do that after the fact.
Well, they made the 3D that was 3D at the end retroactively. You know, they went back and converted it to 3D. No, there's a couple shots you can tell because Hermione is she's pointing her wand and it doesn't have any depth to it. And like it's one of those things that they go in and manually shift the planes.
Mm. Oh,
it's a tedious process. You have to do it by hand.
Very tedious. You have to like recreate background plates and everything. And
I don't know. Yeah, I guess you know more of that.
You're
kind
moving.
Of stuff.
Wow, that sucks.
So, because you know they're doing that for Half-Blood Prince, so they're not going to shoot it like simultaneously.
Well,
they'd be smart to.
They'd smart to do that now, just because it was so popular. The 3D was popular in this one, and that might have been like an afterthought.
They had shot it. Some of it, especially with the two cameras and stuff.
I could be wrong.
Because that was part of the big contention about why Hermione's chest was bigger in the promotional shots, because they were going to use...
We are not going there. That was
holograms.
A terrible poster.
Remember?
Disgraceful.
No.
Disgraceful.
They were going to have hologram
Luna,
versions of the posters.
Hologram... John.
We're going to move on. Okay, can we talk about somebody more important? Jason Isaacs.
Oh, he's not anywhere near here yet.
Oh, okay, shoot. Well, somebody get us there.
Okay.
Well, the festivals are riding on the way to the ministry. It took like 7 hours or something to get there, but the magic of...
The magic of festivals.
Yeah.
I thought it was clever how they flew over London like that. You know, I like that when they did it at the beginning of the movie when they're flying on the brooms. Now we're ending up the movie, they're flying on festivals.
Yeah.
That was
which is neat, but a clear violation of magical secrecy laws.
Pretty much.
The whole flying their brooms into the boat.
That was ridiculous.
From the Houses of Parliament, Big Ben.
Well, you didn't know that when they flew, they were also doing memory charms after they went by. The guy in the back had to do the memory charms.
Were they throwing out pixie dust to erase people's memory on the side of the brooms?
Do you guys know what pixie dust is? Fairy dander.
It's what? It is not.
It is,
Tandra.
Are you hanging out with John Noe too much,
no.
Frankie? I'm disappointed you would say that.
I've been watching the Peter Pan on like loop lately.
Isn't
he good?
I'm in love
He's
with
so
that
good.
Movie.
I love it. The music, the visuals.
Oh gosh,
it's wonderful.
Speaking of visuals, it was cool when they flew over at London.
They didn't show them landing, which would have been complicated.
Yeah.
I wanted them to say Harry Potter rescue mission. I love that part in the book. You know?
I really did enjoy when they went down the elevator and they're all Department of Mysteries and they kept, it was like this pull out of them all standing in the middle. That was one of my favorite shots of the whole movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, that That was really
so they're running down the deserted ministry. There's no security. There's zero people stopping them to get into essentially the equivalent of the Capitol or the Pentagon or the White House combined.
Right.
Well, I think the Death Eaters probably arranged some of that.
Yeah.
You think?
I thought that.
Just because they lured him over there, so I figured we need to get him in the room because we need to have him remove the prophecy.
Sure.
So I would imagine they could put some things in order.
The ministry officials...
Yeah, because you would imagine they're...
They arrived eventually after the orders got there. And like we didn't hear of any, like, tied-up security people.
No. But maybe they put, I'm sure there's, like their enchantments, like, there are around Hogwarts that must be around the ministry. So maybe they, like, put, like, a temporary, like, obliviation spell on them or, you know, like, I don't know, just some sort of obscured that perimeter where they were luring him, you know? Because surely there has to be some other people around. I mean, maybe that's what, like, all those other people that, the Death Eaters that were just, like, elsewhere that suddenly show up after Lucius and Bella.
Yeah, because in the book, he has to check his wand and everything, right? Because there were still people there. Yeah?
Right.
Or that in the beginning?
Remember, that's why he gets that badge. He checks in with the lady and it says Harry Potter Rescue Mission. That's the part.
No, that comes out of the phone booth. That comes out of the phone booth.
Yeah, it comes out of the phone
booth. I mean, is that just magically, there's nobody there?
The phone just knows. Doesn't the phone, like, ask him, like, you know, what's your business or whatever?
Sure.
Yeah. You're safe, Sirius Black.
What's that line about the book? I'd never trust a book where you can't see where it keeps his brain. I don't know if I'd trust
the
phone book.
The phone booth. Bewitching phone booth.
The eighth Horcrux. The phone book.
It could be.
It killed Sirius.
It did.
It is dangerous. Aww. Oh my gosh, Voldemort's coming back through a phone book. We better find him. I guess you have to look him up in the phone book and then, like, scribble his name out to kill it.
Would that be under Evil Dark Lord or, you know,
the Yellow Pages under Dark Lord?
Yeah. He has, like, a full page ad out with a big full shot pose in there.
I think so.
For all your Evil Dark Lord needs, call Lord Voldemort.
1-800-DESTROY.
1-800-5500.
Okay, but so they're right. They're that shot in the industry when they pull it back, that's really beautiful. And that beautiful, I mean, that set was beautiful, right, John? You saw that set.
Oh, totally.
Green marble.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that was massive. Bigger than anything they've done before, including the Chamber of Secrets.
It was a beautiful set.
That ministry set. Yeah.
I really like the interpretation of the ministry.
Yeah.
What's that, Frankie?
I said I really liked how they interpreted the ministry visually. It was really cool how it was, like, underground, but it was still, like, it wasn't old. It was really very nice visual.
Before we get into the particulars of the scene up ahead, I was kind of disappointed that they did not have the planetarium room and the brain room.
Yeah. I was looking forward to all that stuff. I wanted to see, like... I really wanted to see that hummingbird go back in the time room, go back from an egg to full grown.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right.
That would have been a lot of money.
So?
Yeah.
So,
Frankie,
all of that stuff. A lot of money for them to just walk through it just for a second, probably. They would have made it. They would have fought in there. They would have done everything in there, but...
Yeah. And then I wanted to see the Death Eater have a baby head.
Yeah, the Beltar head. Yeah. That would have been really kind of cool. Or kind of probably would have been too scary. But like you said, that would be really effects intensive and expensive.
And a lot of that is extra complicated effects work versus this, like, the room with all the crystal balls, because it's a lot of interacting with actual digital CG's crap, like having brain things wrap around Ron and having them pick up things and things affecting them.
Yeah.
That it all takes so much more time and effort to be thought out and shot, you know, especially for that and everything. When you compare it to just having to walk around with wands in the air, not touching anything in this, you know, room with all the crystal balls, except for the one point Harry grabs the one ball.
So?
It takes a lot less time and effort and money and everything.
Yeah. Well, my ultimate disappointment was this is a little off topic, but in movie 4, I really wanted to see Vila, and I really wanted to see Rita's Theater turn into a beetle. I never got to see that.
Yeah.
So because of that, I'm happy with anything they put in the movies now.
Yeah.
Have you ever drew a vila, Frankie? I don't know if I've ever seen your vilas.
I've drawn a few, but I've never liked it well enough to, you know,
put them up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just it might be somewhere on a blog, one of my old posts, but I've never really been a huge fan. Or it turns into something else, just some random like mystical spirit pixie.
Yeah.
So, okay, talking about effects. Okay, here, all of a sudden, poof, we didn't get anything. We were in this room with globes. And somebody's, yeah, like, going along 99, whatever, you know, whatever. And then all of a sudden, Neville goes, look, Harry, it's got your name on it. I was like, what? You know, I mean, if you did not understand what was happening as theater people, you could just kind of see, now, what is this, you know?
Yeah. But then they don't have to worry about it, because in like 5 minutes there's going to be like an all-out battle and the whole place is going to come crumbling to the ground and they're just going to forget all about that confusion.
Yeah.
But you're totally right. It's like they just stumble upon the room of 100,000 of these globes. Hey, they found Harry's just lucky walking around.
Well, no, they went to the row to find Sirius, and so they were in that vicinity.
Oh, yeah,
and
Harry did have...
Then,
right.
But so, did we ever know from Harry's little vision that, hey, it's that row... Whatever it was.
No.
Well, he knew a row number, but that's it.
Well, and then, you know, I mean, it was a nice shot how they went in. They used that door with the globe, the handle on the door, and suddenly it transitioned it right into the globes, which was a nice effect. And I thought that I gave David Yates props for that. But then all of a sudden, but I just thought it was like kind of all of a sudden, there was Neville that said, look, Harry, it's saying your name. I just thought, well, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's nice to give Matt Lewis some lines and Neville, who I adore, but it just seemed kind of just, what? Yeah, I don't know, maybe I'm just nitpicking. Because it suddenly took a turn for the much better when all of a sudden...
For the worse for the kids.
Well, yeah, well, I suppose that's one way of looking at it.
You have to break some eggs and make an omelet, John.
Yeah.
But his entrance was so fabulous. I was totally Lucius the way he came in. You had to learn what's the difference between, you know, whatever, fantasy and reality. And when he says reality, he takes the whips out that wand out of his cane and it reveals his mask.
Yeah, I like the fact that he wasn't hiding behind a mask. He just, how arrogant and cocky he was. It was great.
It was completely Malfoy.
Find out who I am. Yeah.
Because he doesn't see these kids as a threat, so he's like, I don't wear a mask.
Yeah.
And then in the next movie, he's like, dope.
But that's indicative of what the Death Eaters is their arrogance, is that they don't think anyone can be, you know. And it's their arrogance that's their downfall, you know. I mean, that's Voldemort's downfall, is his arrogance. No?
Exactly.
You know? But that was so sweet, though. He pulled that thing out, and I was like, go. And then I was like, Annie M. No, it wasn't Annie M., but it was Bellatrix, right?
Bellatrix.
I think there's a big difference.
I know. This is that cackle.
Like, Annie M.
You know, just the Wicked Witch. Sorry, I'm trying to be clever, and it didn't work. But
one of the most beloved aunties in history.
I besmirched them. No, I was just saying her cackle. You know, like she was. It was totally that laugh was just what I'm in my head because I'm a goofball. I flashed right into the Wicked Witch of the, you know, Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, that's all right.
It's okay.
So Harry's got the globe. The Death Eaters are coming in. What are six kids to do?
Yeah.
Let's blow the place up. Let's bring down every single globe in this place.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of stupid. You didn't know. I mean, how did they know all of a sudden, and the count all of a sudden, ready, go, to do all that, stupefy all that stuff? I mean, how did they know? I guess you just...
I mean, they probably chatted about it beforehand. They probably were all like...
I don't know, but in terms of a cinematic experience, again, for someone who hasn't read the books and just you're supposed to be watching this as a film, it just seemed kind of like, oh, they all instantly knew.
So they did it in the DA.
Yeah, I guess. Practiced.
With the wooden...
with the dummy.
Death Eater dummy. Yeah. That goes...
It does what?
Yeah, oh, yeah, they weren't practicing.
That's him rolling over to attack. A little... squeaky wheel.
I like that. It does.
So they run away from Captain Hook and his cohorts, and they fall down this door where they're.
I enjoyed that, even though it was completely random.
Yeah,
but it worked because I like Ron's comment. Department of Mysteries, I got that right.
I think I remember hearing from some kind of interview or whoever they said like the purpose to that was that the idea was that the room was messing with them. because it's like, you know, the room of mysteries, all these mysteries everywhere. Or it's like the room, the door leads to nothing and then you fall, but you don't hit the floor. And I don't know.
Random. Yeah, it's one of those wild cards that makes sense that a writer has at his disposal because, like, honestly, they didn't have time to waste, like, on exposition of where they're going. So they just went through the door, fell down, and since it was the Department of Mysteries, quote-unquote, they had the freedom just to be like, hey, that's what it does, because it's mysterious, quotes again.
Well, it's a magical world, of course.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's just one of those. I think it worked well, and I actually enjoyed it.
Can I just say that? All that Jenny's Bombardio, or whatever the hell she did to knock all those things down. I mean, wouldn't that noise, just that noise alone of those thousands upon thousands of breaking glass, wouldn't that? Don't you think that would have gotten ours there, or ours there, a little bit sooner than...
You think they'd have some security cameras or something down there?
I mean,
that was such valuable stuff, and they're sitting here like a bull in a china shop,
pretty
running
much
around knocking everything over. I was impressed by some of the spell work by these guys because they got a few good Patricus Totalises out, and
I liked when Neville. When Luna complimented Neville.
Oh, she goes.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, Luna got a face full of something. She was the only one to really be bleeding out the mouth pretty good there.
Because our girl is tough. Go Luna, man. She's
has
no fear.
Luna would totally have been like my best friend if I was at Hogwarts because we would have been the same house, same year.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
Aw, that's right.
Wow.
BFF.
I was just remember initially being surprised and like, oh good, there's actually, you know, showing blood and stuff. They're not gonna kid up our battle here when it showed like all the wounds they got. And as I remember sitting for the interview with her at the set, and they bring her in, and her handler, whoever, is all like, now we just want to tell you straight up, nothing happened. She's fine. This is her makeup for the scene, because she has all like the blood and the scrapes and things on her face. And they were trying to make sure we all understood that, you know, they
don't beat
brought
actors
her in there from like a... Yeah, she took 10 minutes too late on lunch.
So
and,
she got flogging.
She did. Yeah, she got whipped in the back.
Okay, so now we're suspended in the mystery room, and then we see it. The long, we did not know how they would visualize it, the arch.
How did you guys envision the veil?
It's hard to think about that now that we've seen that. It always happens to me, but I remember being shocked when I saw the picture of it originally. Mm-hmm. That it... But then it making sense. It's so old, and it's been there for so long. It should be made of stone, and it shouldn't be pristine. I like how part of it's broke off.
Originally, like, Stonehenge with a curtain.
Yeah.
And then I really like their interpretation, though, because it was a little more gothic and a little more elegant. And then
and still
the veil being,
curtain.
Like...
But it did remind
like
me,
almost
though,
like this membrane between two worlds was interesting.
Yeah, but it did look very Stonehenge-y, though. I meant the way that they did the sides and the pillars and stuff. It, so,
yeah.
I just thought... I was expecting more of a Colosseum thing, because I just remember... Or an amphitheater, more than what it was ended up being, because there was, like, boulders and stuff. I mean, during the course of the battle, when my favorite...
Yeah, because it was on a big platform.
Yeah, it just...
Because didn't Joe say one time it was built around the ministry, they built it around it?
Yeah. That would make a lot of sense.
It would. But that's one thing I really want Joe to explain, you know?
I still want to know about the whispers.
Yeah.
And, like, why only certain people heard them. It'd be different if everyone heard it, no big deal. But just the fact that certain people could makes me really curious.
But weren't they the same people that could see the Thestrals?
No, because Ginny did, and Ginny couldn't see the Thestrals.
Yeah, that's creepy.
I
thought it was something to do with people who had, like, known certain things or something in their lives. Like, is Ginny being possessed and everything in her first year?
Oh, maybe.
Like, similar to what kind of effect the Dementors have on you.
You know what I always thought in my own head, because I'm a goofy too, but I was just thinking that maybe it's you had to be open and willing to accept that there are more things than, like, Hermione couldn't do it because it wasn't in a book. Her ability to accept the unknown is not as great as, like, say, Luna's, you know?
Interesting. That makes sense. I can see that.
And so, because the death is an undefined thing. It is an unknown for all of us until we've experienced it. I mean, you know, really. I mean, we can technically say, okay, we can, you know, by science, you can say, okay, at this point when your body's no longer functioning, you are dead. But that experience, what happens on is not known. So maybe that's...
It's life's greatest adventure.
Yeah. exactly right. I don't know. But anyway, so that whole thing, I wasn't sure how to expect it, but then all of a sudden here comes Lucius pops back up again, and then everybody's with the Death Eaters. Uh-huh. And, poor Neville. Did you remember that? What's her name? Bellatrix has that thing in his ear.
Yeah, then they, like, she actually hurt him.
Yes!
He actually, like, hurt his eardrum or something.
Wait, she put the...
Why would you put
eardrum?
It in his ear, you dumb crazy lady?
Was she going to scourgify his ear?
I don't know.
I guess.
So what do you guys think about that scene when you're watching it, though? I mean, did you feel that it was... Because it was a lot different than... I don't know.
Oh, it's just convenient that they happened to bring exactly enough Death Eaters for how many kids were there.
Very convenient. Like magic it was.
Make a big circle around them.
Bellatrix is a little different for me, because in the book, for me, she was very much... Like, she reminded me of a snake. She was calm and collected, but she wasn't all over the place.
Yeah.
And, like, so, like, she just seemed very, very, like, you know, but in the movie, she's just as evil and just as maniacal, but just in a different way. I never imagined her that way, being so, like, crazy.
Yeah.
So, it was a little different for me, my experience.
Do you think it's
like,
because,
oh.
You think it's just what Azkaban did to her? And that was how she interpreted it? Because, I mean, she had to do the crazy maniacal breakout of Azkaban. But I think you're right, because I think it makes for a scarier character when there's less craziness, like you're suggesting.
Just because, especially if you look in the seventh book, like, she owns that house, that manor,
yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's not even hers,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, like, she knows what she's doing. And so I just don't see her as this eccentric, like, all over the place. She's more...
Yeah.
I think she could be, like, she's gaga when Voldemort's around, but... I don't know.
Yeah.
I really liked her interpretation of the character, though. It was just different than I expected. So when she was there, it was like, I didn't really, it was a little distracting, is the right word? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm speaking out of turn.
Well, I think I remember reading an interview and they said that she had to tone it down because, I suppose especially later when Voldemort was there and the scenes that are later on, you know. She was really, because Joe had told her that, you know, that she was sexually obsessed with Voldemort. I mean, obsessed in every way.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. I remember that. No, yeah.
So, you can imagine what those...
Awesome.
I would love to see those outtakes on that. Those would be good to see.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, God.
Babe, please.
That'll be fun to watch.
What is
one
that?
Thing I'm really looking forward to seeing in Deathly Hallows,
yeah.
If they do it, is that very first chapter.
Yeah.
When they're all around that table and Harry's up there and they're all chatting and all the interactions with Bellatrix and Voldemort and Malfoy.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I really hope they keep that in.
Me
I
too.
I love scenes when they just let the adult actors go at it.
Oh, absolutely. And now that they're doing two movies, please, please give them more to do. Give them time to do.
And you'd think they'd have to.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I would hope so, too, because honestly, when you boil down the story, all the adults really have are the beginning and the end. They bookend the story because the chunk of it is the three of them running about. And they meet a few people here and there. You know what I mean? But it's pretty much at Gringotts and then Shell Cottage and then and then Hogwarts and the beginning part, the manor and the burrow.
Well, I mean, to waste the talents of those, the caliber of those actors, you know, for that scene especially, that could be really, really intense, you know?
It's amazing to start the movie off that way for general audience to be like, hey, you didn't walk into a kid's movie this time.
No, absolutely not.
Look what you walked into here.
I mean, because Fiennes is such a brilliant actor. He's so superb at playing that, you know, and just him and Rickman in that scene alone could just be...
Oh, hell, I almost forgot that Rickman's in there. I'm just thinking, you have Jason Isaacs and... what's her name for Narcissa?
Yeah, Paula McCrory, I mean, she's pretty... If you've not seen her act before, she's exceptionally good. She's very good. I mean, she's just another quality actress.
I would have been really curious to see her as Bella.
Yeah, me too. I can't wait. I think she'll do a good job, though.
Yeah. Well, and Lord knows all the other actors they'll have as the other Death Eaters will be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to put weak people in those spots.
No, but okay.
It'd be cool if Joe made a cameo as the Muggle.
Charity.
The Muggle is Charity. It would suck because she'd have
people
to die.
People suggested that.
But I think it'd be fun. Because she's just there hovering. Wong, wong, wong.
Oh, my God.
I would be all over that.
But people would freak out because she's so recognizable. Like, oh, no, Joe. Get
down. Oh, don't do it.
They'd hate that snake, that's for sure.
That'd be awesome, though. I mean, everybody would be, like, screaming, like, it's like in the Rocky Horror movies when you scream out loud. They'd be screaming out loud and all that. That would not be good.
Oh, my God. You know, I have a feeling that Joe would love that.
Yeah.
I would, I mean, just be like, yeah, I got, you know, eaten by a snake and killed in home from a movie, from a book.
That'd be awesome.
Didn't we joke about Charity, like, when we interviewed her on the show about how torn up we were about that?
Yeah.
We were joking about, because that was just after we were talking about how, oh, we were so upset about Fred, and we're like, yeah, whatever. I was, you know, more upset about Charity Burbage or whoever she was.
Like, okay, can we finish this? Because it's battle. Can we just talk about this battle? Now, we did the commentary before, so Frankie, I want to hear your opinion of the big stick of Mad-Eye Moody.
I cannot stand Mad-Eye Moody in the movies. I'm sorry. So much so that I didn't really care too much when he kicked the bucket in the book, because it took so much, and it's horrible, and I'm going to get, like, hate mail, and I apologize, but I just really do not like Mad-Eye Moody in the movies. And his little, boom, Death Eater dead. Death Eater dead. He should just walk around the room, stomp on his cane, and Voldemort would have died.
I mean, it's just...
He needs to be in that stomp dance, stomp the yard or whatever.
But, I wonder if he could paint it Bobby Blue would be in the Blue Man group.
My problem is I am such a Lord of the Rings fan. And when Gandalf did that famously with the stick, with his staff, and then I could not help but just, like, I actually burst out laughing when he did that. And I really should not have, because that was not, a humorous scene, but... I was like, no, you're not Gandalf, you know?
Yeah,
because, like, Gandalf did it, that's when you shall not pass,
exactly,
right?
On the Bridge of Casa Doom. I mean...
Yeah, that way there was a presence to it. It wasn't that he just honestly, like, you're... It's like whack-a-mole. He was, like, whacking the Death Eaters. Bunk, 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 bunk.
Well, how many did he kill?
I don't know.
I saw, like, the one, maybe two.
It's
still.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I guess they wanted to do something cool with it, but it just seems...
And even more so, seeing what they did in the special features with, like, the on the DVD with the wand battling and, like, the wand choreography, it's like they put so much thought into it, but then he's all, dead.
I don't know. Do you think his stick is similar to the sticks the Durmstrang kids had when they were walking into the Great Hall?
No, those were cool.
They make magic and everything.
Maybe it is. Maybe it must be. You know.
Is this stick magic?
Yeah.
I mean, if they actually explored that a little more, I love the idea of using other instruments magically than wands. Like, have magical staffs and stuff. I think that's awesome, but it's just so random. They just did it at that one spot. He knocks his stick.
That would be neat.
And then he even did it when he got into Grimald's place. Open. It was like
No, that's a good point. Good point.
But then
poor Sirius, before he, you know... Good one, James. They really...
Well, Sirius sucker punches Lucius first. Or almost sucker punches him, but he's like, get your hands off my
godson,
whoever.
Boom.
Yeah, he punches him. Everybody's like, oh, snap. And then everybody starts apparating him.
Shoot! No, you did.
And then Lucius loses the prophecy. Uh-oh. Crashes.
And that's
down.
What...
Well,
pretty,
pretty
big,
big,
and it was just, like, kind of,
I love the apparating, and they apparate, and, like, they're so confused. They're like, where am I?
Right.
Tongues comes in, she's off.
She looks so, like, bewildered.
and then you have Kingsley, who, like, comes down like a god. He has his head all up. He's like, I am the power of Kingsley. I channel you into this battle.
Voldemort's got style.
I wanted them to summon Pikachu there for a second. throw in the R Peek-a-ball. Like, Kingsley!
Kingsley, I choose you!
Kingsley. Kingsley.
Mad-Eye Moody, I choose you!
Mad-Eye!
Special stick attack now!
Mad-Eye! Hi, Moody.
Thank you.
Oh, man. Oh, wow.
She's going to come back and she's going to kill us. You've done it again.
She likes Pokemon.
That was funny. Oh, my God, me too.
Oh, man, that was great. Okay, and then they fight, and then the privacy breaks, and then...
And then I was not sad. During the book, I was so upset. I literally threw that book across the room. I was so mad at Joe. I'm like, no, I refuse to accept that Sirius was gone. Mm. And this, that thing could have been so powerful, and all of a sudden he's like, frozen, and he just kind of like...
Well, I don't like how he got AK'd first.
I mean...
Yeah, he got AK'd, and then he was still alive enough to react.
Yes.
Yeah, it's almost like he got AK'd, so the veil's like, oh, now that you're dead, I can take you. Come here. Whip! And then he floats up all la-di-da.
I would not want to be fighting anywhere near that thing, number one.
Exactly. But, I mean, because, like, even if you didn't know what it was, your instincts would be like, no, you know?
How cool was it that Lucius, though, was fighting with, like, his king and his wand?
He's cool. Definitely.
They got disarmed twice.
He's very.
I love how Sirius like it does like the underhanded wand movement.
Yeah, it was fun. It was almost like they're watching them fence. You know what I mean? There was an art form to it. Right. I really enjoyed the.
Right.
The
well, they did work it out. I mean, the two of them. There was several interviews with both of the actors and how they enjoyed working with each other. I mean, it's too bad because I mean they're both. I mean, especially Gary Oldman, who's an. You know.
Too bad one's dead.
Yeah, too bad. So they did do some choreographing, and a lot of it was improvised, too, as you can tell. But it was really good. I mean, that part, it was too brief, you know?
No.
I mean, if we didn't have to deal with the stick of power, then we could have had more of that. It would have been more fun, you know?
Seriously.
That was interesting how they used the apparition effect for them to, like, also be kind of existing in... And, like, being able to chase each other as their apparated vapor kind of forms. Because we saw a few shots of them twisting around each other, like the black smoke and the white smoke. And
I enjoyed that. That was kind of fun. It was kind of like...
What exactly
They understand the magic so much, they know how to put their feet in both worlds type of thing.
Yeah.
They have one teleport... Like, cool. You know, it's like they're half teleporting. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. It's wild.
Okay, now that Sirius is dead, and Bellatrix did it, that's when Harry runs out, yes. Like, I killed Sirius Black.
And so she comes out there, and then that's when it's interesting, because all of a sudden we're back in this main hallway of the ministry.
Well, explain to me first, though, why Lupin was just like, no, Harry, stay here. Oh,
yeah.
You want to go?
Yeah, he just let him go.
Why do you just let him go? Honestly, what good could come from letting him chase them?
No. At first, he was holding back that he was going to go through the veil to get Sirius. And so he's like, no, don't go to the veil. He's gone.
You think?
Yeah, because he was like, Sirius, no! But it was muted, so I would mouth it right now, but it doesn't work on a podcast.
Why would Lupin let him just... Why would Lupin?
In the movie, it makes no sense.
Because it's a movie, and they need him to be alone and vulnerable.
But, you don't have the emotional connection. You don't understand why Lupin is so distraught as he was in the books. He was just... You know,
yeah,
that's true. Because we don't know that they're
and you don't understand because as much as I love Prisoner of Azkaban, that whole the importance of their friendship was not I don't think was developed, and they didn't carry it through the rest of the movies. And
Well, I mean, also don't forget that there could have been more of a relationship there than we were ever privy to.
Anyway, so...
Let's move on.
I mean, it's kind of convenient that he ended up with somebody who could change her appearance to anything or anything.
You know, we're not going there. We're just not. So, we're... No.
You don't think?
No, not at all.
That whole scene was... I was very disappointed in that part, I have to say. I just was expecting more of an emotional punch. Or I've been hoping. I knew it wasn't going to happen, but... And then so...
Well, I know what you mean, because honestly, with how they handled Cedric's death, was much more
incredibly
poignant. You know what I mean? And I'm the hugest critic of the fourth movie. Like I really love the last 20 minutes, but other than that,
scene with his father mourning my least favorite over his son was just
It was great.
That's one of the only parts I've ever cried at a Harry Potter movie.
It was.
It was very powerful.
It was that moment, I'm pretty sure.
And so I don't think your expectations were unrealistic, because, like, part of me, I think we were just subconsciously expecting something of that caliber, especially with someone with more of a poignant character as Sirius.
Yeah. But that's the thing. It's not powerful in the books because it's a powerful way to die. It's powerful because we care about him so much from the books. But how he was set up in the movies and so seldomly seen, and so, you know, you haven't really developed as much of an attachment to movie Sirius as you had to book Sirius. And if anything, they spend more time on his death in the movie than they do in the book. I mean, in the book, he gets shot by one spell, he's flying through, and he's gone. But in the movie, there's a moment to have it get hit, oh my God, did I just get hit? Oh my God, look at Harry. Oh my God, take a breath and then fall back and have a moment for Harry to look at him and everything. But it happened way slower in the movie than it did in the book. And that was to draw it out, to make it more dramatic. And it's not necessary in the books to make
it. No, and anything is even more effective because of how quick and sudden it was.
Exactly. And that's exactly what Joe said in an interview. That's what she wanted. She wanted it to happen fast because I wanted it to be real life. When people die in life, it's not always this big, prolonged time to say goodbye, time to settle all your emotions about it. It can be sudden and awful and just ripped away from you in a second. And that's exactly what she wanted when she wrote that for Sirius. So.
But not that dramatic movie death. That was just...
Harry runs off.
And then he's going to do what?
Bellatrix is suddenly terrified.
He doesn't.
Bellatrix, the lips are quivering.
He's
just
unforgivable.
Yeah. I remember everybody's like, oh, Harry should never do it, unforgivable. Remember that when Phoenix came out, the book, and people were all disappointed?
Yeah.
I never had a problem with that.
I didn't either. It's just...
I think unless they're going to introduce spells of equal power that you can use if you're good, then let them use...
I did not want him to do the AK. I really did not. And
I think it's a good point. He didn't.
He ended up using
AK,
the Expelliarmus charm, which is what did it. But
But that whole cliche thing about superheroes never ever having to kill is annoying. Like Spider-Man, for instance. Like, he doesn't kill the guy, but the guy falls on.
And he's still responsible for his death. I mean, he still contributed to what actually killed him.
Yeah.
Spider-Man
killed his girlfriend. Like, even Peter Pan. It's like, Peter Pan doesn't kill Captain Hook. Captain Hook flies away, and then he falls in the alligator's mouth.
It's a children's movie.
I don't know, but it's like the good guy can't be a good guy if he actually vanquishes the evil guy. The evil guy needs to somehow do it to himself.
Batman, he's killed before, but Superman tries not to. It's just a matter of preference.
Yeah. It's just odd. It's like, like you're watching Narnia recently. How, it's like, it's fine in like the quick battle if, you know, Peter will slit somebody's throat or show a mouse slit a throat or whatever, but if it's a calculated decision, like, do I kill the guy now that I've just been battling him and he'll kill me at any second if he wanted to? Or do I, you know, throw my sword on the ground and walk away because...
You know, it's interesting you say that because this leads right to what happens next in the movie when we hear, you have to mean it, Harry. You want to be able to mean it to do these things? And is that a question? If you mean it, does that mean you're bad? And I think that's a very deep philosophical question, you know, which you're getting into.
Yeah, and then like in the seventh book when Harry Crucio's... the Death Eater for spitting in McGonagall's face, he even makes a comment of that. He's like, she was right, you do have to mean it, because he felt the power of the fact of meaning it, you know what I mean? And so it's like, that was an interesting little scene.
But that whole thing of Bellatrix, and then her face, that is an actress right there, though. I mean, her face, the way she just changed. When Bellatrix is on the ground... Yeah, she goes from that terrified cowering on the ground to just that change of that enamored, just, he's here.
Yeah.
It was just...
Oh, yeah, that would be...
She's good. But,
and then we have the entrance of, finally...
Finally! Woo!
He's all like, I am a B.A., and I'm coming through the field for some reason. I'm not my pet Phoenix, which would have been way more B.A.
Thank you, John.
But instead, that's all right.
I really wanted
he's
to
like,
see Fox
like,
call
oh,
me
what's up? And Voldemort's like, oh, no.
But he called him Tom.
I totally have it on right now.
Sweet.
Yeah, oh, that was awesome. I loved that. Hello, Tom.
Is this, John, one of your favorite scenes, though? Is this right here? Did I mess up the part of the sequence? Is when he bats it down, he bats it away?
Oh, yeah, yeah. When Harry raises his wand to Voldemort, he's like, you idiot. Pam. It's like Harry's like, but I have to kill you in 2 years. I have to at least be able to get a spell off now. He's like, nope. You're
just like a little fly. He's just swatting right them down.
I know. Yeah, exactly. All of that effort, all of that, you know, practicing. He has no chance if he was just another regular person trying to fight Voldemort. I remember being so critical of this before Deathly Hallows came out.
Yeah. Okay, Deathly Hallows, Voldemort essentially destroyed himself.
Yeah, completely.
That's what I really enjoy about the story.
But, you know, Fiennes is so, I hate to keep harping about how good he is, but he is. He's just so good. I really enjoy him. And he does gestures with his little, you know, he makes that little swoop as like he's so elegant, like, okay, come do it, you know, face the music. You know, it takes that one arm and he just swoops like that. And it's just those little subtle things that he does that just encapsulates Voldemort, his arrogance and his just, oh, I'm so good, look at me, I'm so suave, and I'm so, you know, and he's just so blinded by his own greatness, his own talent. He's just so, oh, and I just thought, oh, that scene right there, just those little things like that I really look forward to, and I love it. It's sweet.
That's awesome wand work in this scene too. Like, I love the first spell that Voldemort, not that bit, the first spell Dumbledore does. He whips it around his head first, and then he goes for the spell.
It was really just watching how they do the spell work was awesome. Just kind of like it's like they understood the, you know, just the foundation, the basics of magic. Rather than it's almost like there's only one spell cast, but it just kept being bounced back and forth and converted almost.
Yeah,
I mean,
that was really well done.
Really cool.
Until Voldemort makes a fire snake, which is
a fire snake,
a huge fire basilisk looking thing. Dumbledore's like, oh darn. That's big. And what does Dumbledore do? He just chopped its head off or something? He cut the head off a fire snake and then blew all the fire back at Voldemort?
Yeah, he kind of broke the enchantment on the fire that made it a snake and then used the fire.
I mean, all the elements were involved. Yeah. It's extraordinary. How they went from the fire, from the heat, to the water, to the sand, to the, you know, I mean, all the earth, you know, all the different things.
Yeah.
I remember reading about when they had to do the water effect and how, you know, they're so used to doing water, CG water, that actually obeys the laws of physics and everything. And they had to, you know, break all those laws to have it make this, you know, anti-gravity kind of sphere-looking.
I mean,
oh, so awesome. And I love the little sound effect with it.
Yeah.
And then when Voldemort's hand, like, Dumbledore's hands, how he was, like, shaping it. Yeah. Oh, so cool.
I really felt that Gambon was really Dumbledore, and Fiennes was really Voldemort during that scene. I really felt like I was actually getting the real characters for once. I mean, and it was so, but the way that the filmmakers used that back and forth, like you said, and just that transition was just such. That's why you understand why they cost so much money to make these movies, because it's so evident right there, and it was so good. And to watch that in 3D, woo wee!
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it was amazing. All the glass fragments flying off the,
you know,
the windows, too.
Especially, what's that one shot? I don't know how long it took him, but I was reading about how Voldemort's face, you know, how it, like, came out from, like, that. It, you know, like, trains. I forget what that shot is when his face looks like to a snake, to a glass or something. Voldemort's face?
Which one?
Like, I think it's right when he starts in and he comes in, when he's the entrance, just alone, you know? It's like his head merges and it's long and it's all glass. And
that was really cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
But I don't know how long it took him to film that whole scene, but it was just so. But then, can we talk, though? And Frankie, this is where I want to get your opinion, because I know John and Melissa had a long contention about Harry in this scene. When we did the DVD thing, but how did you feel about Harry being in the scene? Kind of just
in what respect?
How he's all, when he gets possessed, and then he's trying to talk to Voldemort, and he's like, "I feel sorry for you, and you'll never know friendship or love." And it seems like he hadn't had a chance to develop those kind of feelings for Voldemort yet. Like, those feelings happened later, after he watched all of the memories from Riddle and everything
Okay, because of what they showed prior about Harry reminiscing about his friendships and all that jazz, like seeing seeing the trio in the common room and whatnot. I bought it because it's kind of like, it wasn't that he saw what Voldemort lacked, he just saw the beautiful things that he had.
Mm-hmm.
And knew that, because, you know, I guess you can argue when you're possessed, you're equally sure, like, you know, he's in your mind, so you're in his. So maybe he just saw that there wasn't anything there that resembled that to him. And so, I think it was necessary, because that was a big growing up part for Harry. You know, it wasn't.
Yeah, that's his biggest growing up part.
Yeah, because, like, he went from fear to pity. And that's a huge step and leap and a huge point in character. And so I think they needed to.
I thought it had happened sooner at this point than it would have than it happened.
Oh, in the movie?
It
happened sooner in the movie or
very
in the
quickly.
Book?
Sooner in the movie. I didn't think it happened at all during Phoenix. I thought in the book.
I see what you mean, because of him when he went back with the Pensieve,
mm-hmm.
with the memories.
Yeah,
see, I need to watch that scene afresh, and I would like to read that scene one more time to get a better understanding of it. But it didn't bug me, and I think he did Radcliffe did a very good job. I bought it, and I was like, wow, it's crazy.
I loved the usage of flashing back to the old movies.
Yeah.
That was awesome. That was really cool to see, and that made me happy. It's like that. This is why we keep the same actors for everything. This is why so we can go back.
Well, it's nice,
because
they're so meticulous about keeping the continuity now. Like, it makes a point, because they're using it. It's a good.
I just really like that scene. I like the interchange between Fiennes and Radcliffe, like you were saying. I thought he held his own, and I really felt sorry for Harry. I really was moved, and I just thought that whole scene was... And I didn't think that whole possession scene... I thought it was really well done. I thought the effects on him being possessed were... I remember we had a feature on it, on Rising Sun, I think out of Australia. Is the one that did the effects on that, and it was so good. Yeah. I just thought it was really good. It was like frozen and quiet moment, but it was really intense, and I really liked it.
What exactly was Voldemort doing there? Did he freeze time in that small vicinity?
I think it was one of those things for a movie. It was convenient, because in a book, that's just like mental dialogue and exposition that the character's feeling. And so, like, and you can't really... It would be awkward to have them just stand there and monologue like a soap opera. And so they made it more so obvious and so poignant that it was intentional with him, like, freezing time and Harry Potter, you will lose everything. It just made it more...
Yeah.
Intentional, I guess?
No, I mean, that's true, because it's such a monumental thing, even though it just might have happened in a short period of time. That was a good way to emphasize, you know, like, the importance of that moment, and just kind of, even though it was fairly quick, I guess, you know, the book, I mean, that was a good way to demonstrate it. So then, and then...
That was plenty for our giant, massive Phoenix Files this week. We're just anxious to be done with the Phoenix Files, to be honest. So that's why we flew it. But next week, we'll go through Dumbledore, spending all this time to wrap up everything that happened for us, and give us a good 20 seconds of explanation.
20 seconds?
Telling us everything. And, and then Harry will get a new broom and freeze frame off to the end of the movie.
No, never. I hate the movie.
No, it ranks up there with the Hagrid one.
Oh,
God.
Anyway, we love
I
Harry
really
Potter.
Enjoyed the ending on this one, because we never saw the station. What's that station? Honeydukes Station? Or what is it called?
Honeydukes? Or
the train station? Honeydukes is candy. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Brain fart.
Hogsmeade
Station on that side. I really like
it. We'll save that for next week, right?
We'll save all that for next week's Phoenix Files, guys. Let's push on the rest of the show.
And we're back.
Hello, and welcome to the drums.
It's time for the drums.
If you enjoy the show, it's been a good show this week. I liked it myself.
This show was absolutely fantastic.
It was...
Bloody awful. I mean, lovely.
It was...
Bloody awful.
I'm so used to saying bloody awful.
I hope they don't agree with this.
So used to just saying that all the time.
Bloody
I
awful.
Didn't correct it. My apologies.
You sound like I can't do it because I have a hiccup accent, and that will just not be not good. But you sound like
we can't do it much longer.
I can't do.
I just end up changing accents. I switch between this and like a Chinese kind of a
what? What are you talking about? I switched like, between Australia
oh,
and Australia.
Oh, Mr. Hammer! Oh, Mr. Hammer! What? For some reason, when Joe's talking to Mr. Hammer, she, you know, she's from Japan. Mr. Hammer, don't do it, please! That is... Oh, Mr. Hammer!
That is
oh,
so
no.
bad. Edit this out.
You are
horrible people.
That's not that bad.
He's pretty awful, isn't he?
I'm working on an animated short about Mr. Hammer.
Mr.
Actually.
Hammer?
I want to
see it. Hammer time. Hammer time.
Hammer.
I don't remember that song.
Oh, Mr. Anyway, other than Mr. Hammer, we have lots of new and fun and exciting things coming to Leaky.
Yes.
We had a very good meeting yesterday about the podcast acting troupe, including bringing on 5 new helpers, which are going to help keep this thing rolling and stay on our collective butts to make sure that we put out a new episode of the show once it gets rolling, once every 2 or 3 weeks. And by the time this show airs, you'll have seen our winners of the first round of auditions, who will be receiving an excerpt of the script and be paired up, and hopefully by next week we'll be able to play back their second round of auditions for you, and we will put together our fun little troupe, and it's going to be very exciting. And we have hopefully we're going to coordinate with a couple volunteers to even put a little music soundtrack underneath it.
Ooh.
Composed originally and especially for the story, as well as some fun sound effects, and it's gonna be pretty fun. We can pull it off. We're kinda newbies at this.
Did you handle it?
It's cool. We got a lot of good help.
It seems like, the little that I've heard from the story, it seems quite intriguing. And I'm quite excited to listen, and if they need a robot voice, to participate.
Ooh, should we give them a teaser, you guys?
Yes.
Should we give them a teaser of the story?
Do it.
I really enjoyed it, but I'm kind of biased when it comes to
a little clue.
Here we go, it's a teaser excerpt of, not really an excerpt, not the script, but it's basically part of the premise. Okay. Ahem. There is a fountain created by the founders that draws on 4 springs, one for each house, with spells on them designed to keep the water pure and full of virtue of that particular house.
Ooh.
The springs are designed to flow together and combine in the fountain. The fountain serves as a check that the springs are working as they should be, and as a reminder of harmony between the 4 houses. This reminder is purely symbolic, but the children do not realize this until the end and think that for the 4 houses to get on with each other, they need to fix the springs. The base of the fountain is cracked and the springs blocked. The children assume that this is the problem, so they start coming down in their spare time and mending it stone by stone.
Stone by stone.
As the fountain becomes whole again, they start to work out that this isn't the whole story. The fountain still doesn't work, and they realize it was never fully functional.
Oh.
The springs never combined it as they were meant, and they learn from the Sorting Hat that this is because Salazar Slytherin left, and the other 3 did not have the heart to finish construction of the fountain as it was originally meant.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I think we're getting into spoiler territory.
Any more. That's interesting.
I don't want to give any spoilers. So, yeah, that's...
Don't be a bad movie.
And it is, for a reminder, this is taking place in the timeline of our favorite Mr. Boy, Albus Severus, in his, Albus Severus' first year, with his friends and siblings, including Rose, and, actually, Scorpius. Will Scorpius be a nice boy? Will he be a grumpy, mean boy? Will he be a Draco? You'll have to wait and see and find out. In the podcast Acting Troops Season 1 play, the season yet to be named. That must not be named yet. Whatever. We don't have a name yet.
Tune in next week, kids. Same podcast channel, same podcast time.
I love Batman, and that was perfect. Podcast trio, acting time.
show that way.
Do it. That was awesome.
Oh, instead of like bam, pow, it's squee.
Yeah, squee. Oof.
I think we should have our one of the podcast friends on to for an interview next week. I think I want to expand the Are You Smarter Than John Noe to give Frack a shot at the answers, too.
What do you mean? Oh. Like,
do you recall the game Are You Smarter Than John Noe?
I do. So, like, I would have a shot at answering him, too, or, like, we'd be a team?
I think you need to be on my team.
Okay, we can try that.
You know.
Do you want to play Are You Smarter Than John and Frack vis-a-vis is my lifeline? email in again at your interest by sending in to step@podcast.com your phone number or your Skype name. And maybe we'll have some fun next week. Something different. We have to celebrate our last Phoenix Files.
Yes.
Which will be very sad. Then we have to get back to
bit by bit. No, but it's good. It's good because it'll be gone long enough so once Six Movie comes out, we'll be really wanting to talk about a movie again. You know?
That's true.
It's just... Everything has
we'll have
season.
A trailer here, but eventually, gosh.
Wait, I would like to put protest here. So the two of you are going to gang up and form one giant brain to try and stump our audience. Is that
I'll understand that my brain is.
Well,
you know we're adding
your brain.
Single digit numbers here to fight a force of hundreds of. Geniuses that
well,
is
I could just be like a lifeline type.
Yeah, you could like give me like the first letter or something.
You could like
I'm
phone a friend.
I think that would be fine. You could be his lifeline.
Yeah, we have different things.
The two of you.
You could ask me verbatim, which is like your last resort, and then you can do a rhymes with and it starts with.
Yeah.
Rhymes with. No, we're not doing charades.
I can do rhymes with. I won't be like.
Tipartium divvidosa.
Yeah, I won't. I mean, it has to be a real word. I can't just like mingle letters together to be like.
No. I am going to call us in on this, and we are going to say no to that. It rhymes with. Oh,
Just trying to be creative. You should give us a question
pathetic.
Right now. You should Google something.
Stumbly dank.
Pathetic in your desperate attempt to win.
Pig Latin.
I do not believe.
Humble.
Frankie. Pig Latin.
Grumbly. How do you grumbly blank? Wait, grumbly.
Grumbly.
Humble. I can't
grumbly
do pig Latin. Okay, what is Ixnay in real normal English Latin? I don't know.
Like Max or something?
Nix? Like Nixic? That makes total sense.
Nix the talking or something.
Oh, okay, I was trying to figure that out a long time. And figured it out on podcast. Nice. Did I tell you guys about the story when I was 14 and that's when I learned how to spell hello properly? I was 14 years old. I thought you had to spell hello, H-E-L-L-O-W. But then I had a friend come in, and she had a Hello Kitty bag. And I was like, they spell hello wrong. And she's like, no. I'm like, yeah. And she's like, how do you spell hello? And I'm like, H-E-L-L-O-W. And she's like, no. And
where did you get that from?
Because it sounds like H-E-L, hello, wah. Not hello. I always pronounce it hello.
Wait a minute, and you are a teacher, calm. And you had education educators
dyslexic.
That let you get through. Well, so am I, but I mean, did it not get corrected before them?
I have a really horrible time spelling. Like, honestly, if I had to spell something that's difficult for me or get shot in the face, I would try spelling it right, but I'd end up getting a bullet in my face. Because I'm really bad.
Well.
That's a horible analogy, I'm sorry.
It is, but you know what? I struggle with this too. But I mean, for me, it's more pronouncing words. See, just like that, I botch it all the time.
Yeah, I was an RSP when I was little and gay, so I was just I was stupid and smart. I just bounced each other out in different areas. I was skewed, not stupid, just
you're skewed. No,
you know
I know.
It's just
I had the same thing. I understand that, but Hello Kitty. So Hello Kitty saved the day.
Hello
you know
Kitty
that right there is rather tragic.
Nor do I like cats so much.
I know that's it.
Oh.
They save you.
Oh, wow. That's a bit
but
tangent.
Hello Kitty.
Speaking of
I
cats,
mean,
tune into podcast.com to see more of Frankel Doodle's drawings.
Yeah, I'll be posting them up. This week,
we'd love your
they'll drawings. Probably be up before you hear this. It's us singing
food asking where Melvin is.
Bravo!
A golden charity donation and superhero cats.
Superhero cat.
Yeah. I do enjoy
my cat. You know, my Bellatrix has a mask. She wears a mask of goodness.
A mask of
goodness? But she's not Bellatrix. She's just Arabella.
What is she, a shame?
Some days she is Bellatrix, but, you know.
Is she ashamed to be owned by a Hufflepuff or something? Why is she wearing
a mask? She is owned by a Hufflepuff. No, she... Well, because sometimes she, I think she's much more like Bellatrix.
Oh.
You know, so she's in disguise, you know?
Like that she's a Death Eater cat.
I think she might well be, but I don't know.
How many Death Eaters do you think come from Hufflepuff heritage? Like their parents were Hufflepuffs, but they want to be Death Eaters?
Oh, I see what you mean. Of heritage, not them literally being Hufflepuff.
Oh, I suppose that there's I think there's Death Eaters of every house.
I do too. I mean, there has to be. Because
because evil is not just limited to one faction. Evil comes from, you know, as a choice, I think, you know, within. Even though I think it exists and it's out there and it manifests on its own, I think that they, Death Eaters choose to be that way.
They do.
And it doesn't matter what house.
It's a choice or a series of choices and or compromises you made through your lifetime that just kind of then makes you more prone to them. So, like, Death Eaters, they weren't born a Death Eater. They just made choices and it was a slippery slope and... They have to remedy it, but, you know, they were...
We should have a canon conundrum about which, if any, Death Eaters that we know of could be Hufflepuffs.
The Karos.
Why is my house being singled out?
I think the Karos.
Because there's so many from your house, John Nelly? You reckon that's
so quaint. It's just like, oh, a Hufflepuff Death Eater.
Quaint.
Like, it's so cute. Look at him. And the old
look at him trying to be evil.
Oh, look at me.
Who's the one that always got beat up? The one in Deathly Hallows that got beat up all
the
time.
Wait, what?
That would be a Hufflepuff. The one that's not very, very effective. I think that's probably a Hufflepuff. I just don't think it's in their nature to be effectively evil.
Mm. Yeah, it's like they're posing.
Posing.
I just want friends. Oh, that's mean. You are mean.
They're not very selective.
You know what?
I think this is turning quite chaotic.
I think I always think about the house, you know, the ghosts, and I think that the Fat Friar could take you down at any time and outrank you at any time.
Except for the fact he doesn't have corporeal form.
Well, you know, that's the mere technicality.
I just wanted to say corporeal form, so that was the excuse. You don't use corporeal in the proper context very often, so you have to take advantage of it when you can.
You know.
Sorry, it was random.
For some reason now, I just thought of opening up like a diner called the Fat Friar. Or they just serve a bunch of fried food.
Oh!
That'd be fun.
I didn't even make the connection. That's great.
Totally. You get French fries and chicken fingers and mozzarella sticks and...
Fried Twinkies.
And Fat Friar.
All the stuff that people love to eat that is terribly bad for you. But you know what?
It's like TGI Fridays.
Gangbuster business.
Wow. Okay, let's... Wait, okay. We have to make restaurants for each house real quick before we go. So Fat Friar would be a fry place, obviously.
Yeah.
And so...
And have to have beer, because, you know, I'm just
like
saying, it's my house.
I feel like some fondue joint being Hufflepuff.
A fondue?
No, that's Slytherin, because of potions.
Yeah, they brew it.
Oh, yeah,
well... Slytherin might be a bar, because they have the Bloody Baron.
No, because they are not festive. They are not festive.
No, I'm thinking like a creepy nightclub bar that's just kind of you don't want to go to because the lights are weird and people in there are snobby. I think Gryffindor would be a steak joint for some reason. And then Ravenclaw would be...
A steak joint? Like, they're all, like, you know, like...
Just, I don't know. It's just kind of...
That's a very brutal image.
For some reason, I see Slytherin's being, like, this really uppity restaurant that's really more concerned about, like, its, like look and feel than it is as food. I don't know. Like, if I were to ever give Slytherin a negative connotation, I don't see them enjoying food as much as...
Mm.
Gryffindors and other people.
Alright, so I don't know what would be a Gryffindor restaurant. We gotta finish this out, John.
Probably a burger joint, maybe? No?
Oh,
kind of festive. I'm seeing like a college pub type thing.
Yeah.
No?
A very varsity club. You know, very varsity club, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, like a Damon's.
What's Damon's?
They
don't have those out here. Like TGI Fridays?
Yeah. It's like a sports bar.
Yeah.
They have a bunch of screens up. Everybody plays trivia, and there's a bunch of pennants on the wall.
Any other
Americana sports
cluttery-ish,
bar.
But not, not cumbersome, just fun.
Yeah, a big onion loaf.
Okay, yeah, then I see that. Okay, what about
Onion loaves. I love the onion rings. I mean, but I guess that would be a fat fryer food, too, you know? So there you go.
So Ravenclaw, I feel like it's one of those, like, kind of... I've seen these pubs before where they have, like, a bunch of books on the wall. Maybe, like, more of a coffee joint, you know?
Oh, see, that's the kind of place I would like to own. You know, where you can go, like, because my favorite things to do is to, like, go to, like, to Barnes & Noble on a Sunday and just, like, hang out and have coffee and read and read books and stuff. I think that would be fun to have, like, a little establishment with books in the coffee shop.
I could see that. I like coffee.
That would be
like
cool.
Books.
Yeah.
I've been on a Starbucks kick lately, you guys. It's been getting dangerous. Not really dangerous.
It is addicting, isn't it?
I just had my most recent drink I've been getting is this Starbucks double shot thingy majigger. And the venti has 5 shots of espresso in it.
I got your text message.
And I told Freck I was wired as a snitch. I drank that whole thing in about 10 minutes. Yeah, exactly. Oh, man. But anyway, till next time, guys, keep twiddling those dials.
The next password will be acting troop.
Keep each other safe.
Keep faith.
Good night.
Good night.
Stop it, you. Free.
Oh, and about time, too.
We've missed it.
I confess myself disappointed.
Now. If you two don't mind, I'm going to bed.
Great, Scott. No wonder. Look at the time. We've been here nearly 4 hours.
Spooky how the time flies when one's having fun.